Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 134.
This week on the podcast, protests erupt in cities nationwide over cigarette taxes? No, wait, that's not right.
An uninspiring but mistake-free campaign crushes an uninspiring but stupidity-filled Mary Landrieu campaign in the Louisiana runoff.
Obamacare proves yet again that simple math and logic have evaded GOP politicos even in regard to a plan they thought up.
And Rolling Stone fact checkers set anti-campus rape activists back 1 zillion years. Should somebody call Aaron Sorkin? It sounds like Rolling Stone editors really need an ethics monologue.
Enthusiasm about the fake economy's fake good news is not a good enough reason to blow your cash on Christmas gifts.
And North Korea's tourism website proves that they weren't responsible for the Sony hack.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Do that.
Find us there. I think that's the right move for anyone out there who's listening to this podcast.
That's right.
Yeah. And then now we're going to stop boring you with advertisements for ourselves.
Yeah, and we're going to start the podcast with a similar story that we started the podcast with last week, which is unfortunate.
You might think that this podcast is actually just a repeat of last week's podcast.
No.
I guarantee it's not. You should just keep paying attention. We'll get through this story, and then you'll learn what's different.
Yeah, we'll get through it together.
That's right. That's what we're here for. We're here for you.
Yeah.
So we had another non-indictment in a police death-related situation. This one was not a shooting.
No.
It was an NYPD officer who choked a man to death.
It was a chokehold.
It was a chokehold debacle, if you will.
Yeah.
So basically, the officer's name is Daniel Pantaleo. And he was a plainclothes officer in Staten Island who tried to arrest Eric Garner, who was a guy who was selling loose cigarettes on the street.
Is that what they're called? Loose cigarettes?
They're called Lucy's.
Lucy's?
Yeah. You want to know why I know that?
No,
because I live next to a fucking rehab facility for 400 homeless addicts, and we have a Lucy situation on the block.
I bet.
Also,
right, because the cigarette tax there.
I know. I learned about all the latest street drugs from my parents, so I also know about that. But the reason that this is not legal is not, it's not an arrestable offense, really. It's not legal because the taxes on cigarettes are super high, and so you're not allowed to just like sell cigarettes to any old person, you know, without making them pay a tax. Like, the whole point was it's supposed to be a deterrent, and Lucy's make it difficult. It's a way to sort of split up cigarettes so people can afford them.
Yeah.
So it kind of defeats the purpose. However, it's not an offense you deserve to die for, certainly. It's not even an offense you should really be arrested for. Because it's like illegal in the money way, like in the Treasury Department sense.
Exactly.
It's not illegal in the like criminal activity sense.
Right.
In any case, so what happened here though was that, and Eric Garner was really big.
Very large man.
And
yes.
He was asthmatic. And so he had some health problems. A bystander videotaped this scenario.
Yes.
And in the videotape, you can see him saying, "I can't breathe," like 11 times before he dies.
Yeah.
And interestingly, the bystander, only person that's been charged with anything so far in this case.
The one who videotaped it. Right.
Yeah, the one who videotaped it. But "I can't breathe" has become sort of the mantra of this growing movement that's sort of aiming to address police brutality issues nationwide. But in the NYPD specifically, there have been so many cases like this and so many incidents, through the years that have kind of like, come to our attention and then fallen and then come to our attention again, that I think people are really ready, especially in the wake of Ferguson. There was like a lot of anger about this that sprung up immediately. And there were already people who had organized protests over Ferguson. So people were in action.
Right, exactly.
Things were happening. Chokeholds, by the way, are not allowed in the NYPD.
No, they're not. And this was ruled by the coroner as a homicide.
Exactly. But it sort of brought to light, I think, some larger issues with the way that the police have been used recently by recent administrations. You know, the way that they were kind of trained to act under Giuliani and Bloomberg was a very antagonistic, approach to policing. And so people have sort of been having issues with the police like this for years.
Well, right. And that's what we're seeing sort of really around the country, which we'll sort of talk about in a little bit. But I mean, so many of these, I think we're now starting to pay attention to all of these things, which is good because we should be. But most of them are sort of one particular incident that sort of brings a larger problem to a head.
Well,
because that's what we saw in Ferguson. We talked a lot about that, like, that was not just about that issue.
Absolutely.
That was obviously a terrible thing that happened.
But that was
a larger problem of what was going on in Ferguson. And this is a larger problem
with
New York City.
What's been going on in post-9/11 America.
Right, exactly.
Really.
We're seeing that it's a problem in the America, not just sort of,
and
like
it has a lot to do with the way that policing changed in the wake of 9/11, because it, you know, I can't remember who it was that said that the, you know, the police are kind of essentially treating the people that they're there to protect like enemy combatants,
right?
And that is not the approach to, you know, if you have a terrorism problem, call the National Guard.
Right.
Like, your community police are not there to protect you from terrorists. They're there to protect, they're there to keep peace. They're peacekeepers.
Right.
So, like, this type of, like, constant suspicion towards people and constant overreaction is, like, it's a symptom of a larger problem with the way the police have been trained to treat the people that they serve.
Right. Well, and that's one of the things, one of the other things that we've been seeing with a lot of these protests is, you told me the other day that large groups of people are telling the police that
you serve us,
yeah, or you work for us.
There was like a big showdown. I've been watching live streams of it. I'm going to have a lot of thoughts about the protest because I desperately wish I was in New York for this because it looks like super fun. But there was like a moment where like five different groups of roving protesters like came together in Times Square and shut down Times Square, and they got ushered back onto the street, and you could hear from all sides people screaming "You serve us," as because it was the first time the police really like caught up with the protesters.
Yeah.
There's just been like wild protests going on, and they're so unpredictable that like no one really knows where they're going or what they're doing.
Yeah.
But that was the first moment that the police really like were able to kind of put a stop to it, and the whole crowd was immediately screaming "You serve us," and it was the only unified chant anyone could really get behind because everyone else was like talking about whatever. But that has been sort of the refrain of a lot of these protests because, you know, for years, even, you know, especially with experienced protesters, I mean, that's, you know, we saw that with Occupy, we saw that with the way the police, you know, came into Zuccotti Park and, you know, messed up shit there and threw out their library, which I'm still mad about. But, that has been an interesting thing to emerge. And also there's been a lot of, you know, on the political level, there's been a lot of kind of also angry responses. The police have been acting like de Blasio threw them under the bus, which I think is an exaggeration of what happened. But he is somebody who I think, you know, A, knows that he's a progressive mayor and he can't allow this kind of, you know, antagonism to stand. And he has this problem because he brought Bratton in to run the police. And Bratton is sort of famous for these kinds of tactics.
Exactly.
But also de Blasio has a son who's African American.
Right,
he knows that this issue kind of, you know, hits home for him.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's somebody who really, he's announced that they're going to try to retrain the police in, you know, more effective ways of community policing and stuff like that. But this is something that he definitely, I think, now realizes that he will have to address and wants to address.
Well, I think he's a good, perfect person to do it.
I think.
I mean,
Kirsten Gillibrand, American hero, was up in arms about this.
Yep.
And even really had stronger words than anyone else when it came to, you know, the grand jury decision to not indict this officer, because she was sort of like, we're going to talk to the Department of Justice and see what we can do.
Yeah.
And Obama said vague things about it because he's the kind of person that's just saying vague things at this point about stuff. And so, but anyway, these were the most exciting protests that New York City has seen since Occupy and probably ever. I am so excited about it. That's all I talk about. I'm driving everyone crazy in my office, in my life, whatever. I don't care. You guys can deal. But these have been, they're sort of like Occupy-style protests where people are just sort of like coming together and protesting where they feel like it. But they've been using some new tactics that are kind of interesting because they're not permitted protests. It's not like those big marches that no one ever actually ends up reporting on and they're kind of a waste. They've been harnessing fewer people to greater effect, I think, than I've ever seen in my lifetime. I don't know if you can hear those dogs, but there's dogs here.
Yeah, they're protesting.
They're protesting.
Something.
They're angry about police brutality, too.
Someone walking in the front door, I think, probably, of our studio.
Yeah, police brutality. But in any case, there have been sort of these, like, roving bands of protesters that have been meeting up in various locales around the city, and they've been doing, what they've been doing is blocking traffic, and, like, by walking in the road. So they're not, like, you know, they've been doing some die-ins at big intersections, things like that. People are doing a lot of die-ins now.
They did that in Grand Central Station.
Yeah. Well, it was raining that day. There were some indoor protests on Friday, I think, because it was raining.
Good. You got to be creative.
And they did some die-ins in Brooklyn. You know, there was another officer shooting in Brooklyn by a 28-year-old dad named Akai Gurley. And so there were some protests surrounding his funeral on Saturday and things like that. So they've been doing die-ins. They did a die-in on 34th Street also, where they laid in the street for 11 minutes. You know who started the die-in thing, by the way?
Who?
L.A. No one's giving us credit for that. Yeah. The first die-in that I saw reporting on was at Rodeo and Wilshire. They did a die-in. Like before Eric Garner happened, like during the Ferguson days back last week when we were protesting that.
Right.
They did a die-in at Rodeo and Wilshire.
That's the odd place to do
it. I know. It was a bold move because no one else had done that yet. And then everyone started doing die-ins. And LA blocked the 101. And then,
yeah,
and our protesting, by the way, has been lame since then. We've had the worst protests of any city in America.
Yeah.
We're the lamest people on earth. We can't help ourselves.
We had
but we had a good start there for a while.
Yeah, we had a good start. And we had the one that marched down Hollywood Boulevard the other day. I saw a video
the
of
one that.
That looked
find.
Like that was a pretty... Yeah, well, I think it was on Friday or
something. Oh, it was a Friday,
right? Like,
because yesterday I went looking for a protest that I never found.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And then I bought lipstick at Sephora. I feel very guilty about that. And I've now admitted that to you to alleviate my guilt.
Yeah.
But
you and I both had our own brands of guilt this week because you were guilting me for watching.
Yeah.
You were guilting me for watching Peter Pan on Thursday night, which then later I felt bad about, but... Actually, at the time, I didn't because I was watching Peter Pan, and that was exactly what I wanted to be doing at that very moment.
On Thursday night, while everyone in America was tweeting about Peter Pan, I was watching a live stream of the protests in New York and getting really angry that it was very hard to follow what was going on Twitter because so many people were tweeting about Peter
everybody
Pan.
Everybody was... Right, yeah.
So I was infuriated about that because it was, like, the most extreme examples of stupid versus important that I've ever, like, seen on Twitter.
Yeah, no, I get
like,
it.
Like, two nights... Two big events, one of them completely ridiculous and stupid, and one of them very important.
Yeah.
Everyone chose the stupid one to tweet about.
Exactly.
Welcome to America. In any case, there were protesting, there have been die-ins going on, but there's been a lot of, like, these walks through traffic have been genius because the New York City traffic is, like, really with them, so people keep high-fiving them. There's this great picture in the Times of protesters walking through traffic, and there's these two guys that are, like, older men in black suits in a black car looking grumpy. Sort of. I mean, their faces look grumpy. And there's protesters streaming by them, and you can see a guy in the back, like a passenger in a cab, is like high-fiving the protesters. And the guy who's driving the car has his fist out the window, like in support. Like, it's just genius.
Yeah, it's great.
So there's a lot of that going on. And when you see these protests, when you see the live streams, it doesn't feel like the traffic is like angry that the protesters are there. It feels like there's a lot of honking and support. There's a lot of people high-fiving everyone. Like,
yeah.
New Yorkers in general are just angry.
Yeah.
Of course, Al Sharpton has decided that this is, I think, the moment we stop caring about Al Sharpton. Like, this, I think he's, like, a little bit too much of an opportunist, and this is such a decentralized movement that for him, he's not going to be able to organize it around himself like he would like to. He's not, and he's not the right voice for this. This is a much younger issue than he represents.
I agree. Well, and I also think that, you know, separately from him just sort of maybe not being the right person for this, and I mentioned this earlier today, too, and I mentioned it because I've been hearing other rumblings of it, too. But I mean, like, you know, he sort of, like, he has the president's ear a lot of times on, like, you know, race issues and stuff like that because he has been a leading voice in the past. But, like, this is a man who owes, like, $40 million in back taxes, by the way. Like, he's, I mean, he's sort of
ethically challenged.
He's ethically challenged. I mean, it's amazing to me that he still has a television show. Like, it's perplexing to me that he is still
around.
Even moderately relevant, because he's sort of like, and I love Al Sharpton, but he's kind of, he is now kind of like a joke of a person, at least
to
me.
He's interesting because he's sort of, in certain ways, he's sort of bulletproof because he has been discredited and then
come back and then
been discredited again, like so many times. And the man just never steps out of the limelight.
Right.
He's like shooming up a storm. He's like Chuck Schumer.
Really is.
He just, if there's a camera, he'll be there.
Yeah.
And I think that in this case, you know, the families of these victims have been fairly articulate, so there's not really a void for him to step into because they are able to articulate the issue better than he's been able to. And then on top of that, this is like an Occupy-style movement. It doesn't need
this kind of
leader. It doesn't need someone like him. He's trying to organize a march on Washington. I predict that will fail. I have designs on going to a later march on Washington if there is such
a
thing
that's
that
real.
Will be like a massive big one, because I think that would be fun, and that would be a very, like, I sort of feel like this is almost like a sort of, this is like post-civil rights movement, civil rights movement.
It
like,
is.
This
it's
is
the next,
civil, this is the next civil rights movement that could be like a really defining part of our generation.
It should be.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think that it's sort of like the perfect time for it. Because I think that on top of just everything else that's happened, I think a lot of people, especially people our age, are like sick of all of the like overtly racist things that get said about the president. Like,
well,
you know, we've been listening to this on the political scene for so long. And it's like at a certain point, you just want to be like, OK, I'm a Democrat. I'm not thrilled with what Obama's been up to. He's not been that effective. I get it. But it's not because he's black. And I don't need you to like keep sort of like pushing back over that.
Yeah.
Like, that's not the thing.
Yeah.
There's things. But like, that's not it.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's sort of like part of it is that we've just been hearing a lot more overt racist rhetoric in the last 8 years than we ever have in our lives.
Totally.
You know? And so that has brought a lot of this to the forefront.
Yeah.
In any case, There have been protests just everywhere.
Everywhere.
It has been so exciting. There have been protests in D.C. There have been protests in Chicago. They blocked Lakeshore Drive. In San Francisco, they shut down Union Square. Where was it? In Seattle, they had a big march. I bet Portland had a march. They would.
I'm sure.
You know, there was Austin had marches.
There was one in Anchorage.
There was one in Anchorage.
I mean,
they had one
in
Dallas. They had, you know, it's just been, like, thrill city for marchers.
And there have been other ones in regards to separate incidents, which we're going to get to.
Yes.
But there have been, this was unfortunately not the only terrible thing that happened to unarmed African Americans this week.
No.
And that's an important point, too, I think, is that this, and we see this a lot of times sort of like after school shootings, and granted, maybe that's not a great analogy because nothing ever gets done after those either. But for a while, you remember like after like Newtown and like some of those things, we started, Huffington Post was doing a good job sort of like for weeks after that, like posting like every time that there
was
a shooting.
And it turns out there was one every day.
It turns out there was one every day. And I think that we're seeing sort of a little bit of this because I have a feeling a lot of these stories of other things that happened this week, we would not have heard of had not been on the heels of these two things. And that's
a good thing.
It's bad that they happened, but it's good that we are sort of like in a place where we're going to care about them.
I think part of, you know, there's been the sort of Black Lives Matter hashtag. And I think part of what's been frustrating for everyone about this issue is that these things happen all the time and it's not even news.
Well, right.
You're like, oh, a black guy got killed by a cop. What a shocking turn of events. Like, that is just happening.
Yeah.
And to the extent that black Americans have had to sort of absorb that that's a concern that they will have. You know, like, as a white person, you don't walk down the street assuming you might be shot by a cop for no reason. That's not a concern that I have walking down the street. It would be a concern if I were a black man, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, just having to sort of, like, have grown accustomed to that problem is what's, I think, pushed this over the edge.
Yeah.
That's a frustrating situation to find yourself in.
Yeah.
And that sort of makes it impossible to feel like there's any justice in the world, which no one, you know, has felt like at these protests. In any case, the tactics these protesters are using are just, like, genius. I'm so into it. And this is, I'm going to say it again because I say it every week over something. But thank you, Occupy.
Yeah, sure.
Like, we can all still go on about how terrible millennials are and how Occupy accomplished nothing because it was sort of like vague about what they were aiming to do. But these are all tactics that Occupy taught everyone.
Yeah.
You were hearing mic checks going on at those protests. You were, you know, the idea of sort of decentralizing and marching in traffic and doing things like that, those all came from Occupy. The idea of like organizing these things on social media, those were very Arab Spring inspired Occupy style movements.
Say.
Occupy was an Arab Spring style, you know, style movement.
Well, it was, but you've seen these. But, this is not just happening now. This is a worldwide thing that happened out of Occupy.
Yeah, and because of that, you know, the protesters have been one step ahead of the NYPD the whole time. They, you know, I say they caught up with them in Times Square. That was after days and days of people marching around all over town. No one could keep track of where they were going. If the police blocked them in one direction, they'd just turn around. Like, they could just keep moving freely. And they were bringing the protests to places that never see protests. The Upper West Side had a protest the other night, and it was huge.
I know.
106th Street is not where you find protesters generally, because what's going on up there? But there were thousands of protesters streaming up Broadway, passing Zabar's, passing Fairways, like all sorts of places.
It's a place that could use a good protest every now and again. Probably.
Well, and it's, you know, it's a neighborhood where people would definitely be supportive, but it's just sort of a sedate residential neighborhood.
Right.
So these things don't happen there, but it's wealthy and it's influential. And it,
sure.
like, you just are seeing things happen. You know, there's always a protest going on in my neighborhood in New York. Like, it's a fucking shit show of protests constantly. You can't throw a stone without finding a protest near Union Square, you know?
Sure.
But when you see protests start coming to, like, parts of Brooklyn that rarely, you know, get media coverage for their protests, they have them in Brooklyn, but we, you know, we never get media coverage. And, like, the Upper West Side, that's exciting. But the other thing is that they basically kept at it long enough that the media had to start covering it. So normally there's a night of protests and everyone shows up and no one ever talks about it again and it's like it never happened. But there was, like, 3 days in, Anderson Cooper was finally like, I'm going to report on this.
I know, well, that's what you said because you were watching it and you were like, CNN is finally...
CNN was doing, like, wall-to-wall coverage of it. CNN had four reporters out in different cities or something like that. I mean, like, CNN finally, for the first time in their lives, caught the ball, which was shocking. But, I mean, like, this was reported on in every major newspaper.
Yeah.
And that never happens. So that was exciting. And then there's also this weird thing going on where there's a hashtag for criming while white. Where people on Twitter are, white people on Twitter are admitting
to things
that they've gotten away
with
because they were white.
Yeah.
You know, it's like people who like stole cars when they were teenagers and things like that.
Right.
Things that would have definitely gotten you shot if you were black.
Right.
And are definitely not getting white people shot and or even charged.
Or even put in prison. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that's, and you know, to some degree, like there has to be forgiveness for like youthful indiscretions, I feel like. It's, so it's not even that I feel like a lot of these things are things that people should have been charged with. Like if you're an idiot teenager, like you're probably up to idiot teenager nonsense all over the place. You want to keep the peace in society. You want to make sure idiot teenagers only do this once. But right. like you don't necessarily need them to die over it. No, and like no. that is sort of the reality that I think white teenagers get to live with, which is like, I'll steal a car once and then I won't die.
Right.
And like that is not what everyone else gets. So that's sort of yeah. been part of the discussion on Twitter, which has been interesting. And then there's been a weird response from the GOP.
Yes.
Where they're desperately trying to harness all of this energy.
Yes.
And they are not sure what direction to go in.
They're doing it wrong.
They're doing it wrong. Because Rand Paul and Ann Coulter, and I think probably other GOPers, came out, and after the Eric Garner situation, came out and said that taxes were to blame for all yes. of this. If we didn't have cigarette taxes, he wouldn't have been arrested, and then he wouldn't be dead.
Yep.
So see there.
And this is...
See that.
I'm disappointed in Rand Paul. But also not shocked.
These are not shocking points of view. Yeah.
I'm glad Rand Paul said that, only in the sense that it brings him back down to earth for me a little bit.
Because, yes, thank God.
You know, like...
People forget this about libertarians, by the way.
People forget this about libertarians, but also it's sort of like, I feel like this is an opinion that Rand Paul...
Has.
Personally, probably has, but also could have ultimately just let Ann Coulter take the ball on this one for him, because he's trying to sort of, like... supposedly, in theory, like, get past all of these things and sort of, like, be, you know, a part of the solution, like, in a lot of these sort of, like, racial issues. And, like, that sort of, like, is a thing that, like, a lot of people have been applauding right. him for as being someone on the right who has, you know, doing the right things here. Yeah. And this was, like, he could have not gotten involved with the whole tax argument here, but it's not shocking that
he went for it.
He went for it, yeah.
I know. This is, like, a real, I think, misread, too, of, like, These I know that smokers are angry about these things, but these cigarette restrictions have been so massively popular in most of the places that they're practiced.
Totally.
That, like, this isn't even a good read of, like, a side issue that you can sort of make this about. Like, no, no one even wants to talk about this. I personally couldn't be more thrilled. Like, I am in charge. I believe that cigarettes should be taxed at $1 million per cigarette. And I would be in favor of whoever is selling Lucy's on the street being... find $1 million per cigarette sale over that. That I would be in favor of. I just don't think anyone should die over it.
No.
You know, it's not a death... It's not a crime. I don't believe there are crimes that you should be put to death for, but no, I also right, don't believe right. that this could possibly be one of them. But I'm still... At the same time that I believe that, I also believe that cigarette taxes should be even stronger than... like, that really we should criminalize, in the tax sense, any sort of anything that has to do with cigarettes ever in the world.
Sure.
So, like, this is just, like, a sort of... This is, like, the opposite of a direction that I think is helpful for them to go in, even for themselves.
Yeah.
Because I don't, you know, I think that we're almost, like, with cigarette taxes in New York City, I think they are almost at the $5,000 bullet, you know, style
right.
scenario. There. Like, that's the thinking on these, is, like, the taxes are good. Yeah. They work. They got people to stop smoking. That's what we wanted. Like,
yeah.
that's, like, the one thing I think Bloomberg accomplished yeah, that wasn't horrible.
You can't be a smoker in New York City.
If you're not a millionaire. And, yeah.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But anyway, so this is a hilarious thing that the GOP is up to try to harness all of this anger. And no. I think they're also misreading it, because the anger, while there have been calls for Obama to be doing more, the anger is not with him.
No,
it's you know, not. it's with this sort it's of with police the, state mentality. It's yes. with something that came to us under Bush. So that is already a problem for them, ultimately, yeah. not for the Democrats. The Democrats, yeah. this is not a problem for them, because this is an issue they can win.
Yeah.
You know, this is I a agree. Problem for the GOP.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. Meanwhile, every city has a cop that's shooting unarmed black people.
Right. This goes back to sort of what we were saying earlier. We're now going to tell you some of the stories that yeah. we probably would not have known were stories
exactly.
had it not been sort of for the two, you know, grand jury
right.
Non-indictments.
Yes.
The last couple weeks.
There was a 12-year-old in Cleveland who was waving a toy gun in a playground and got yep. shot.
Yes.
By an officer who really, like, didn't assess the scene before.
No, he really didn't, because he was, like, someone called them and that someone was at a park with a gun. And so they went, but, like, I mean, he was 12. It was one of those things where, like, I think they shot him from the car, right?
Yeah.
From the police
car,
right?
They shot him as they were driving out of the car. So they didn't even look at what they were doing.
No, they just fired first and
right.
sort of decided
and he was 12.
Worry about it
so
later.
He yeah. he wasn't like, you know,
yeah,
he wasn't like a 50-year-old man, like, it
yeah.
you know, they could have taken him. But it also I think sort of You know, the guy on the phone even said that it might be a toy gun. Like, that was already part of the discussion, and the officers say that that wasn't relayed to them.
Yeah.
But, like, that... I think maybe we can have a discussion about making toy guns less realistic looking, because that's a thing that maybe this could bring up for us. But, like, this certainly was, like, a sort of shoot first, ask questions later kind of situation.
Yeah.
And the police department was like, that's how we train them. And I was sort of like, that seems like the wrong
thing. Speaking of, one of the demonstrations was that after this happened later in the week, a bunch of protesters went into a Toys R Us.
I think
it was the one in New York. I think it was like one of those.
Yeah.
Isn't there a big one like in like Times Square or something like that or whatever?
Sure, why not?
Like, and they, all of the protesters like grabbed all of the toy guns and sort of like waved them around. Like,
that's terrifying.
You know, whatever. So anyway.
I don't know if that's my favorite protest tactic.
Well, I don't like a good
toy gun protest.
Well, I mean, like, I have the same feelings with you about toy guns, but like, I thought it was also sort of like a kind of
clever visual. You
know, yes, exactly. So,
And it turns out that the guy who shot him had a history with another police department that was not so rosy.
But there's another interesting thing here, as well as the Eric Garner situation, because I feel like a lot of the potential solution to fixing these things in the future that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks is to make sure that we have body cameras on the police car. And the first, Eric Garner was being filmed as that happened, as we know. You can go and watch that. This, I don't know if this was a body camera or if this was just the police car camera, but there was video of this as well.
Right.
And there's video of the officer like exiting the passenger side while the car is still in motion and then shooting the kid like seconds later. I think that we need to sort of like look harder at whether that is a solve here or not, because now we don't know what's going to happen with this. This guy may be charged. This just happened this week.
Well, he also might be caught in what is a sort of rising amount of, like, he might be the guy that got unlucky, you know, in a slew of cops that are getting away with doing this. Like, he might be the guy that gets this, you know, the hammer falls on.
Right. But anyway, I think, you know, it seemed like a good idea in theory, but like, I mean, just obviously, at least in terms of Eric Garner, having the video proof that this was happening, that he was basically dying and announced that he was dying.
And there were EMT workers around there. I mean, the whole emergency services world was right there.
So maybe that's not the fix that we were all hoping it would be. But anyway,
we'll see. No, I think that, you know, because de Blasio is talking about getting officer cams for...
I mean, it has helped in places that...
I think that what it does is it... You know, this is the problem that we have with what happened in Ferguson, is everyone has a crazily different eyewitness report about what happened, and there's
no
point of view that anyone can even attach themselves to.
That
is why it was important to get an indictment in that case, because no one actually knows what happened.
Right.
So many witnesses were saying many different things.
You gotta have
a trial to figure it out. The officer cams at least sort of like present a point of view about what happened. And I think the reason that we were able to be so incensed about this was because we knew.
Right.
And that was sort of an important wake-up call. And, you know, a lot of the times, especially when dealing with people in minority communities and things like that, police can sort of act with impunity, and no one can say anything about it because, you know, people are only willing to listen to white men talk about what happened. And so, like, no one listens to what happened.
Yeah.
I feel like the officer cam thing is probably a good idea just in terms of, like, establishing a point of view. Not necessarily so that you can be like, this is the only point of view about what happened. Like, obviously, cameras don't catch everything.
Right.
But the only reason we're able to talk about these cases and understand that these officers acted sort of outside of the law was because someone was filming them.
Right.
Otherwise, they could just be like, I didn't do that. And we'd be like, oh, okay.
Right.
You know? Which is what happened with Darren Wilson.
Right.
You know? Is he's not sorry.
Right.
This guy
we had it with Eric Garner.
No, but we had it. That guy apologized. That guy was caught, you know... That guy had a very different reaction than Darren Wilson did
to what he
had done.
Right.
That guy knew he had done something sort of outside of the law. And I think that he probably doesn't believe he should be charged. And the police believe that he was within his rights and all of those things.
It didn't help with an indictment, though, is what I'm saying.
No. But that was the first, you know.
Yeah, no, you're right.
That was
yeah.
the first. That was sort of like the first time that kind of story broke. So I think that it will help with indictments in the future.
Hopefully.
Well, I think this whole discussion will help with
indictments
in the future.
No,
I mean, that's
100%.
But I think that more than that, having the sort of like proof that something went awry is different than a case where all the eyewitnesses are saying different things and you're trying to trust the white guy because that's what you were trained to do as a jury, basically.
No, you're right. Yeah.
In any case, the Phoenix police also killed an unarmed black man, like you do.
Yep.
He was completing some sort of drug deal in a car.
Brandishing a pill bottle.
Brandishing a pill bottle, like you do. And they he tried to flee, and so they chased him like into like a into an apartment nearby.
Yeah.
And then they couldn't restrain him, so they killed him. And then it turned out that the thing that he was reaching for was a bottle of pills.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. And there was a weird incident in Hollywood and Highland where this guy was not unarmed, but he was not carrying a gun.
Right, he had a knife.
He had a knife and was sort of, he had assaulted somebody. This story, by the way, gets crazier because every time I hear something about it, the details get even, like,
I know.
Suddenly he was a transsexual and suddenly, like all the details are crazy in the story.
Yeah.
But, and he had been sort of acting crazy at Hollywood and Highland for a while.
Shocker.
Shocker. By the way, guys, everyone there is acting crazy.
There's not sane people. There's only insane people and tourists at Hollywood Highland.
While looking for the protest yesterday, I had to walk all of Hollywood Boulevard. It was a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, it's terrible.
That place is crazy.
It's the worst.
It had what I refer to as the Seattle kids, which is what I refer to middle-class white people who are wearing dreadlocks and acting homeless.
Uh-huh.
There were like packs of them, like roving packs of them.
Yeah.
There were like a bunch of punk teenagers. There was like...
Packs of actual
roaming homeless people. Mm-hmm. There were tourists coming out of my ear. Like, tourists everywhere. Like, it was just insane.
Yeah. Fanny packs for days.
For days.
Yeah.
Fanny packs for days, slow walking, obese people, not slow walking. People dressed as any kind of superhero.
Yeah.
At a certain point, was looking for the protest at Hollywood and Highland because it supposedly had moved to there.
Yeah.
And, like, literally could not locate where it could possibly be because the crowds of people were so insane.
Right. There could have been a protest going on.
Could have been anything going on. I would have believed anything. Anything you had said.
Uh-huh.
But in any case, this was odd because it was witnessed by, like, tons of tourists. So there was, like, a police shooting where they shot the guy who was brandishing this knife. Because I think he reached into his pocket, and before he reached out of it, they had shot him. Like all these tourists saw.
Yeah.
Welcome to LA, guys. We're having a lot. Like, we have a lot of intersections with shootings in this town.
Yeah.
This is like, remember Hollywood? That wasn't a police shooting, but Sunset and Vine had a big shooting.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like
there
was some guy just shooting up. There's more guns here than there should be. We have strong gun control laws. I don't feel like we need to be having this many gun issues here.
No.
Fucking cars. People get away with shit in their cars. I'm against it.
But the UN has had it with us.
Yeah, they're fucking over us.
I mean, that's a sad scenario, basically. Like, I mean, seriously. Like, the United Nations, their human rights office or whatever, basically.
Right.
Like, they, on Friday, they called for the United States to stop policing practices nationwide that the officials say disproportionately target Black Americans, which is obviously true. So they're not happy about that, which they shouldn't be. But we are the ones who should not be happy about that.
Right.
We shouldn't have to have the UN like, guys, like the UN should be telling China things or, you know, dealing with Kim Jong-un, who we're going to get to later. So, you know what I mean? Like, that's what the UN should be doing. They shouldn't be telling us to, like, get our policing practices under control. Like,
They shouldn't have to be telling us that.
Because we need to hear it.
Right.
We shouldn't need to hear it.
Right.
Is all I'm saying.
Yes.
And they also criticized specifically the two grand jury decisions not to indict this week over they felt like was clear, should have been indictments.
Yeah. I mean, that's sort of, I feel like many Americans, I didn't really understand grand juries until recently. And now I'm sort of like, why do we have grand juries? Like, it seems like maybe a waste of resources.
Yeah, totally.
Because it seems like any case that could come up against a grand jury could maybe also just be tried.
Yeah.
And I know that would use more resources, but like, is this also a great use of resources?
Yeah.
No. It seems like it's involving more jury duty for people than it should. And Bren, who's never done jury duty, does not understand.
I know. Well, it's so interesting. I've never been called out of the holding room or whatever. Oh, and there's a couple other points before we move on here, because I heard someone actually on NPR, you know, there's a lot of sort of like, what can we do? What can we do? And obviously we can't do any sort of, we can't do anything specifically about these two things other than, I suppose, protest, which we will hope lead to, you know, some sort of like lasting change. But, you know, being on a jury is a thing that so many people are constantly trying to get out of. Presumably, some of the people who are off protesting have probably tried to get out of being on a jury at some point.
I have.
And don't do that.
Here's what I can tell you about that as someone who... Because there's different kinds of juries. And yes, grand jury is an interesting kind
and
of
I,
jury.
And I totally and get that.
There's yes. a lot. I mean, I think what people who say that, it's always lawyers that make that case.
Yes.
And those lawyers are just frustrated because smart people don't want to serve in their juries. Well, here's right. what I can tell you as a person who's been called into several panels.
Yeah.
Smart people don't get to serve on juries. You get kicked right. out if you're a smart person. Yeah. If you're a person who knows nothing about anything, then you get to serve on a right. jury. So, or if you're like a retired person, I guess.
Right.
But I mean, there and the reason, and this, so it's also rich that this comes from lawyers, because the reason that most people don't want to serve on juries is that the courts and lawyers are totally disrespectful to the fact that this really is a sort of infringement on people's time right. in a way that is that can be frustrating. It can affect yes. your life. You know, in Los Angeles, everyone freelances, and because
right,
of that, that's not an excuse to get out of jury duty. So suddenly you're giving up days of work to go, you know, what yes. to hear some dumb traffic case. Like
yeah.
these are things that people who, because I feel like jury duty could be as important a civic duty as voting, which I think is your most important civic right. duty. And that's the one that most Americans aren't doing that right. pisses me off. And that's it frustrates me that jury duty is required and voting is not, yeah. by the way. I feel like those are equally important.
Yeah.
But I also feel like the jury system has flaws that no one is sort of like talking about that makes it massively annoying to serve on a jury.
No, you're totally right. Yeah.
Because that is, it's very disheartening to go into those panels.
Yeah.
Very disheartening.
And the other thing, too, and you sort of brought it up just in terms of voting, that and we have talked a lot about just voting in every election and in knowing about what's going on locally. Right. But so many people who sort of, like, deal with these cases and grand juries and things like judges and district attorneys and things like that are people that we do get to elect.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that's an important thing to remember because, you know, who's to say whether a different DA or whatever like would have led to a different outcome here, but I mean it's certainly worth paying close enough attention to know who you're electing to those yeah. posts, and not enough people are doing that.
Yeah, no, and it's something that, because those elections are hard too, because you don't really know how to determine who a good candidate is right. for district attorney. A person with a name seems just as qualified as any other person
any other
with a name.
Person, right.
You can't really like know what their like lawyering practices are. Right. That's like not a thing people look into. I mean, I think that there is to some degree sort of like a need to change the way those elections happen because they're so confusing. Like, remember when we were voting for insurance commissioner over here? Do you know what an insurance commissioner does?
Don't.
Do you know who you voted for?
I don't.
No, of course not. Who right. the fuck is the insurance commissioner and what
voted,
do they do?
I might have voted for someone who was trying to
get rid of
Obamacare.
Yeah, like, I might have voted for a Tea Party, for all I know. Right. Like, it's impossible to know what we were up to because yeah. we were voting for so many fucking people and none of them were people that we could have possibly known anything about other than that they would write things like, he's a family man and he has heard cases for 13 years, like things that have nothing to do with anything.
Yeah.
So maybe that's a discussion more broadly about how we figure out how yeah. to make those elections things you can possibly vote in
yeah.
with information.
And lastly, and this is a thing that I know is very near and dear to
yes.
your heart, and I think enough so that we can probably call this some thought crime going on, basically, because there was a blog on Huffington Post that I was like, ooh, I'm going to throw this at Lila, because one of the things that you love to talk about mm-hmm. is your sort of like, you know, you don't love that the gays don't get on board with
yeah.
like a lot of other things that like should be of concern to
right.
them, basically. And the HRC, the Human Rights Campaign, has been entirely silent
yeah.
on this. And yes, it's technically an LGBTQ organization, but if they are to truly stand for human rights, and also a larger proportion of non-whites identify themselves as LGBTQ, this is an issue
yeah.
that should be
on
the
radar. They should be commenting
on. At least, like, I should have at least gotten an annoying email from one of them.
Absolutely.
From Chad Griffin or whoever it is that sends me those dumb emails all the time. Like, when he wants me to go vote, you know, for some candidate who stands up for gay rights or whatever.
Right.
Like, have a press release for
yeah,
this. For God's something.
Something. Acknowledge it's happening. This is what I find specific. You know, there's like this sort of HRC strain of the gay rights movement. That is, because I, you know, I am Facebook friends with a lot of more sort of like radical activists, and a lot of them are LGBTQ activists who are sort of like far left activists, and they talk about the intersection between race and sexuality and all those things all
sure.
the time. But HRC is the voice of the gay rights movement in America. It is
yeah.
It has the ear of Congress. It has the, you know, it's politically connected.
Yes.
It is staffed.
Well funded
and all sort of run by rich white men, basically.
Right.
It is the rich white man's, you know, gay rights group.
Yeah.
And because they have the ear of everyone and these other groups are considered fringe groups, it frustrates me greatly that they don't expand their reach or even their education with, yeah. at all outside of, you know, outside of their sort of narrow, and I mean, narrow sort of like, even just like narrow in the terms of like marriage focused
right.
purview.
Well, right. Yeah, exactly. Because
this, the reason they're not talking about this is this does not fit into their goals. Even, you know, this does not, they almost can't see the connection between, you know, racism and discrimination against people who are gay or, you know, whatever they identify as, right. because that's not really their issue.
Right.
Their issue is like this very sort of narrow definition yeah. of equality. So yeah. in any case, I'm on board, and that was thought crime, and I'm a genius. So deal with it, America.
Right. Yes.
in any case, moving on. What a shock. Mary Landrieu crushed.
Killed.
Over. Done.
Yes.
By
about the percentage that we would have expected yep. due to...
14 points.
Right, yeah.
The number of points that she... Because it didn't... Isn't that basically the number of points that the challenger got?
Yeah.
The third-party like candidate
the
got
person,
in,
right. this
in
is
their
like,
original election?
Math would have led us to this conclusion,
yeah,
basically.
Because I believe in the original one, she got like 44% of the vote. This time she got 43% of the vote.
right.
She got less of the vote somehow because she's yeah. less desirable well, she even
got,
than she was.
She got more terrible.
She got more terrible over... Yeah,
just in the last 3 weeks.
In the last 3 weeks because she thought she was going to pass Keystone and then it didn't... She couldn't do it. So
well,
it turned out she was
and
like
that,
impotent completely.
And the fact that she lost by this much is, I think, what she would have lost by... had they had that Keystone vote passed anyway, which is so infuriating that yeah. they decided to vote on this anyway. I mean,
I
you and I went on a tirade about this already. We don't need to do it again. But, no. like, the fact that they tried to, like, save her seat after they had already lost the Senate, she's an awful, wretched woman who, like, basically is yeah. only concerned with ruining all of the environment, like, in all of the universe. Like,
that's her plan.
That's her master plan. That's what she stands for.
She is the like, oil and gas... lady.
You don't try and save her seat by passing the Keystone XL pipeline,
no.
which nobody wants anyway in your party. Like, that's not...
That's nobody's plan.
That was shouldn't have been the solve. Because
no.
she was, A, going to lose anyway, and
yeah.
B, don't pass that.
Right.
So, anyway, she's terrible, and I'm... Like
now
you said earlier, I'm sure whoever is the Republican who's replacing her is more terrible, but
right.
I don't care that she's gone.
No, and I also feel like we're not... We're not in a position where we've lost the Senate more over
no,
her.
No, exactly.
She was never an ally to begin with.
No.
So we didn't lose the Senate more than we already lost it.
No.
It's gone. It's lost.
Right.
It's not because of Mary Landrieu that we lost
it,
Right,
now
it,
they have 54, I think, instead of
right.
53. It's like, I mean,
and she
okay.
was sort of like, she is somebody who like, literally, like, first of all, couldn't get a white person in Louisiana to vote for her to save her life because she was not... horrible enough, I guess, for them. But then also, she was trying to appeal to African-American voters without actually talking about Obama. And he is still popular in the African-American community in the Deep South, even though everyone believes that he's not popular anywhere.
Yeah.
He's a guy that you want to associate with if you're trying to get black people to vote for you somewhere.
Yeah.
In the South, especially. And they were, like, going out of their way to, like, not talk about it to the degree that, like, nobody wanted to vote for her in the original race. And then,
yeah.
as soon as this runoff happened, they were like, actually, we're very close to Obama. I don't know if you've heard, but they started using a talking point that Republicans had actually brought up, which was that she votes with him 97% of the time. That was a Republican talking point, guys.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, she well outspent Cassidy, who is the guy who actually took her seat. I think, you know, she spent, before November, like $16 million
right, well,
on
she
this
was
race.
Right, well, she was trying to win outright, because I think if she would have gotten
right.
50%,
then she could have just
she could have
walked,
just,
yeah.
Right, so that was her initial master plan.
But then she also seemed to think that the Democrats would, like, sort of back her up in this runoff election.
No,
and the Democrats were like, are you
lost
kidding?
Cause. We're going to spend a dime
no.
for you down there? That's not
so they
happening.
Canceled all their spending in that race when it looked like she definitely couldn't win it.
Yeah.
And now she's gone.
Yep.
Also, she's part of, like, a dynasty down there, so her
yeah,
family
her
is
family
not gone.
Is, right.
Her whole family's in politics. Her brother,
yeah.
Mitch, is the mayor of New Orleans, so that's...
She,
we'll hear from her again.
Oh, probably.
I'm not excited
I mean,
to.
She's a three-term incumbent. She'll probably run for the Senate again,
yeah.
I would assume.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
And I think that they would probably let her on, I mean, as terrible as she is, at least to me, I have a feeling
I
she would...
I want them to experiment a little over there.
I do, too.
I want them to run a far-left candidate and just see if they can get
see what happens.
The same amount of the vote.
Right?
If they can get the same amount of the vote, then you don't need her. That's
exactly.
You
that's,
know, that's what
that's
I feel
true.
Like. It's, I think something like a third of the electorate is African-American in that state. That's a big chunk of the electorate.
Right.
Like, if you can get that plus just a few non-racist white people to vote
right,
for you,
then you've
you're
got,
on board. You've got it.
You've got the amount that she got.
Exactly.
Right there.
Yeah, no.
You just need 10% of
need,
the rest of humanity.
Exactly.
And then you're there.
So, like, give it a try. Who cares? Why not? The Politico called Cassidy's campaign uninspiring but mistake-free, which
well,
sort of sums up the whole, he was like a stiff, boring guy,
right?
Who was like a more evil Mitt Romney, basically.
But that's all he needed.
And that's all he needed. He just needed to be alive.
That's right.
And not Mary Landrieu.
Yep.
So good riddance to her. Meanwhile, some news on the Obamacare front.
It's just killing on all levels.
Smooth sailing, yeah. As far as the eye can see.
So you may remember about the Republicans talking about how the rate increases were going to be through the roof and astronomical, and you were going to have to, you know, going to make you go broke.
P.S.
To have to
nobody
sort of
who
like,
understands math would have ever made that claim. But
right.
P.S.S., if that is it PPS or PSS? I can't remember. I don't write letters anymore. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah. It's PSS, I think.
PSS. No, I think
no,
it's PPS.
It is. It's PPS.
Post script or whatever.
Yeah. It's not post script.
No. Well, although that's you know, who cares? Yeah. PPS.
Yes.
The rate increases are lower than they were expected to be.
Yeah. Then even the Obama administration had initially said, which is what the Republicans were saying, were not going to happen anyway. So, like, not only were they, like, not... as they weren't as much as anyone expected, including the Obamacare people who sort of like thought,
yeah.
you know, said what they were going to be. So they announced this week that they're only going up like slightly.
Like 2% on average.
2% on
average.
Instead
of the 5% they predicted.
Right. And also that is at a much slower growth than they were doing before 2010 when Obama signed this bill, which where they were going up like 10-12% every year. Yeah. So,
I mean, I remember those years. Those years, of course, where suddenly you'd be like, oh, it's $200 more expensive a month to insure myself.
Yeah.
Also, in 14 of the 35 states that the federal exchange is using or is operating in, yeah, they're going down.
Yeah. So, I mean,
let's just talk about heroic strategies for...
Seriously.
Like, you know, we're still critical of not having a single payer plan. Sure.
Sure.
Are we... convinced that this is working better than what we had? Yes.
Yes, much.
Are we convinced that it's working better than the Republicans could have possibly imagined when they thought of the plan in the 80s? Yes.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. And also in this report, which should come as no shock to anyone, is that there's 25% more insurers are going to be participating in 2015, which like is
this
just
is
like
where
a
the
big,
customers are.
Duh. And
they're
that
on
was
the
another
market.
Right. That was another Republican talking point, was that there was not going to be enough choice here for people. But of course, like why wouldn't the insurance companies want in on a market where people are being forced to buy your product?
Issue here has never been that insurance companies did not want this.
Yeah.
It has always been about other companies not wanting to pay for it.
Right, exactly.
The insurance companies love this kind of shit. Because insurance companies get, it's like boom times for, Massachusetts is like an insurance hate heaven.
Right.
It's boom times for insurance companies.
Yeah.
So this kind of plan is nothing a company likes better than having everyone be federally mandated to buy their product.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on.
Yeah, so like 91% of consumers now can choose from at least 3 different insurers, and that's up from 74%. So, I mean, that's... It's like, it's more choice.
Smooth sailing.
More choice.
As far as the eye can see.
More and cheaper choice. I mean, isn't that what you're
looking
for?
That's what you're looking for.
That's what
you're looking for. As a consumer, that's what you're looking
for.
That's
what you want.
As a Republican, you're looking for different things.
Not so much.
And we aren't sure whether those things are worth looking for.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, there's been a lot of discussion about campus rape.
Yes.
Recently. Dating back to months ago when that, you know, there was a girl at Columbia who was carrying her mattress everywhere. There's been discussions about this surrounding a lot of colleges and universities, mm-hmm. including my own. I'm getting a little annoyed about the emails that I'm getting about it, but I'm just letting it slide off my back because I'm so invested in these New York protests that I just don't have time for other protest emails is really the issue.
Sure.
But in any case, there's been a sort of concerning trend for years of college campuses covering up
how
people
who
come forward
about
rapes.
Yeah.
And so there was this Rolling Stone article because there's I think a federal investigation going on already about the University of Virginia's policies towards dealing with rape victims. So they were already sort of under the microscope. And Rolling Stone published a story about a girl who claimed she was gang raped by a fraternity.
Right. And it was a huge story. I think it was a big story. It sort of, you know, talked a lot sort of about nationwide what we're doing here, but like also this specific story and also just with Virginia, the University of Virginia having sort of like the background that it does with sort of like some issues they've had in the past. It was a big deal. And it was also just like a really sort of, you know, I mean, the story itself was upsetting. That she had gone on she had gone on a date with this person from the fraternity. I think they were having a party that night. She went back. She was gang raped by 7 people. There were 2 people who were like, you know, sort of like, you know, in charge of the whole thing, basically. And she, of course, you know, she didn't use people's Rolling Stone protected. She didn't want them
she
to
didn't use real names.
She didn't use real names because she claimed that she wanted to be protected from retaliation.
Right.
So they honored that.
And they also honored not talking to the people that she accused.
Right, exactly.
Not just not using their names, but also they didn't corroborate her story with anyone.
Correct.
And then a bunch of discrepancies popped up. Right. So on Friday, they published a note from their managing editor being like, we're not sure the story is real.
Right.
And then, and because the chapter of that fraternity, it was Phi Kappa Psi, you know, Phi Kappa Psi, the fraternity.
Sure.
They said that a lot, they disputed a bunch of her claims about what happened.
Well,
they
right,
said that
the
weekend that she claimed that this occurred, there was not a party at the fraternity. They claimed that, you know, she had said that the initiator worked as a lifeguard at the pool. They said they don't have a member who works as a,
who
you know,
worked
as a lifeguard.
Pool. Right, yeah, exactly. But these are all things that Rolling Stone did not
know when they published the story.
No. And but they didn't also, you know, this is, I mean, it was really, really, really lazy journalism. I mean, yeah. I understand why they sort of like, you know, met her demands too. But these are things that
they could have followed up on independently.
They could have followed up on independently and did not
Absolutely.
Do so. And
yeah.
that I think is. There's a lot of things that are upsetting about this story. That may be least of them.
Right.
Because, I mean, I think what this is going to do for, you know, a lot of people on campuses
gonna,
who are claiming that they've been raped.
Yeah.
I think
this is going to be
very damning to
the discussion.
And that's too bad. I mean, she was an activist herself.
Right.
Which, I mean, on some level is maybe why this story got created on
sure.
her part either. But a lot of people still think that something happened
well,
to her.
Yeah,
she says she's like a very... Sounds like a very sort of like troubled person who has had something traumatic happen in
yeah.
her life, but it's just whatever she told to Rolling Stone did not happen as she told it.
This is a disaster because there have been a bunch of these examples at UVA, so like this kind of got the big sort of press ball rolling.
Well,
and now
did,
that
and
being debunked is sort of damaging to other people who were trying to get the administration to change their policy
right.
already for incidences that did happen. As
well,
they said, you know?
Well, what I will say is that everything coming out of the UVA after hearing about this on Friday, they're saying the right things because they have said that regardless of this,
the problem is real.
They have to keep their eye on the prize, which is to get this problem under control regardless of
yeah.
this. So that's good because you're right. It seems like they could have easily been like, oh, well, this is no longer a problem. And they
yeah.
are not doing that. They
no.
still see it as a problem. And they're still
they
taking the steps to fix it.
They are still a school that has never once expelled a student for raping another student.
Well, right.
Exactly. And they are still a school that is the subject of a major investigation
right.
into their practices
right.
covering these incidents
yeah.
up. So that is a problem
right.
that they have not yet face. It's like a hard partying school. Like
yeah.
part of the issue is not, I mean, this is an issue that has cropped up in non-harm partying schools as well, but
sure.
they're part of the issue with the administration turning a blind eye to it is that it's like,
right.
it's a big party school to, you know, and it's the culture of it kind of makes these stories kind of more extreme and more numerous than
right.
they are at a lot of other schools.
Yeah. I think it was the number one party school last year, right? Don't they always do those lists?
It's
always on the list.
It's always on the list. People
yeah.
are drinking a lot there. What
yeah.
are you going to do? When I was in college, we sort of separated schools into like beer schools and pot schools. And at pot schools, like not much goes on because people
sure.
are just stoned all the time.
Yeah.
And at beer schools, too much is going on. This
yeah.
is a beer school.
right, exactly.
But in any case, the other interesting thing is that the student was interviewed by the Washington Post and stood by her story after all of these allegations
yeah.
came out. And then also it came out that she had actually asked Rolling Stone not to publish the story before it did. And it didn't, like, they published it anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, a lot's going on with that. But it's...
Well, and the Washington Post has been the one who has sort of, like, been debunking this,
yeah.
really. I mean, they're sort of...
makes sense. This is sort of the local major paper of that area. So, like, that
right.
would be kind
well,
of...
it was their sort of
their
media
purview.
Critic
yeah.
who I think...
picked up on these.
Initially was
yeah.
kind of like, this is not right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just unfortunate because I, you know, since the beginning of time, really,
right.
I mean, women who claim that they have been raped are
right, are
disbelieved.
Often treated like they're not, like they're lying. Yeah.
So, you know, to actually lie doesn't help. And
no.
this should not sort of discredit future people from,
right.
but it will. Because what happens is it's always sort of like,
well
that one time that girl lied.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's
no,
just sort
exactly.
of like you
this
when
is, no, this
when
is
you
a
have when,
bad
you, when you have a story like this, this is the story that will now for the next
follow
God knows how many
years will
follow real victims around.
Forever.
And that's
and I mean that
unfortunate.
Is
it's
unfortunate.
More than unfortunate.
It's also
I mean, it's tragic,
just sort
really,
of
is what it is.
It's the status quo, unfortunately.
It is.
So we'll see if see if anyone will ever get believed about, you know, it is, I think, though, that this discussion has been larger, at least, than this UVA case. Because if I'm hearing this discussion happening about Vassar, then it's bigger than this UVA case, you know, and there's still sort of like some momentum behind it in schools where there are sort of where there isn't this culture. There isn't, you know, Vassar doesn't have fraternities. They don't have, like, that being an allegation at Vassar is a very different kind of story, but it only came out because this kind of story was being published. So hopefully the discussion will eventually move away from this situation. Right. Because this is really just sort of like a bad journalism situation more than it is like a epidemic situation. Yeah. I think more so than anything else, it'll be sort of a discussion within UVA for a while that will be damaging because it will allow the administration to not really do anything and pretend they're doing something, you know?
Well,
meanwhile, we had job numbers,
maybe meaningful jobs numbers, but I mean, seeing as how they're fake, like you can't really necessarily know, but they were big. Finally,
big
finally,
jobs numbers.
Finally, the jobs numbers that like everybody has been looking for a while, because we added 321,000 jobs in November, which was way stronger than anybody thought they were going to be, which maybe is
a sign that they'll be reexamined.
Yeah. And anyway, but, you know, it's the, I think they were projecting like 250,000 or something
like that. It's a holiday season bump. Like there's a lot of holiday season contingent and seasonal work that goes on.
Yeah.
This
so, year. But it's the 10th consecutive month of job gains and, of over 200,000. So, and it was also on top of that, and this is a thing that you and I have been talking about a lot too, and obviously we still need to be catching up to this, but finally it was like a 0.4% increase in earnings, which is like more than anyone was either expecting and much more than we've been having. It's either been totally stagnant or every couple months it'll like tick up by like, you know, a tenth of a percent basically.
Well, and that's sort of finally been the next frontier of this discussion, because now that everyone is able to get jobs, that there's actual jobs, we have discovered that many of them don't pay well.
Right.
And that it doesn't help to have all of your time taken up by a job that doesn't,
that you can't, that you still can't live on. Afford to live. Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's just a waste of everyone's
time. That's a problem. Yeah. Yeah. And 0.4% is
not going to solve that.
It's not going to solve that, but at least it's like this.
At least
everybody was kind of like, all right, this is a sign
that
this is going
in
the right direction, because it had been stagnant for so long.
Exactly.
So to see any sort of, you know, uptick in that is sort of like a pleasant, you know, pleasant surprise. Yeah, exactly. So, but, you know, this is sort of, everybody is also, you know, you're right. This is coming at a time where a lot of these are probably sort of like temporary holiday, you know, hirings. Yeah. But between the, you know, uptick in wages and also how cheap gas prices are right now, you know, economists are sort of like thrilled at what could be of this holiday season, which I know is sort of like a ridiculous thing to say, but like also like you do want, you know, I mean, it's good for the economy when people are spending
money. As fake as the economy
is. Like that's what drives it. Is like people buying things.
Exactly.
So, you know, we could. And also with the economy, it oftentimes, you know, like these things sort of like compound on top of each other. So it's like,
here's what I'm going to say, everyone. Rich people, go to it. Shop to your heart's content.
Right.
Poor people, save some money.
Save some money.
This is a good time to start a savings account.
Totally.
Like, I'm sick of economists being like, you have to shop to make the economy happen.
No,
and ignoring the fact that all the wealth is contained within a couple people who could be shopping up a storm. And then we'd all have money again. But they're like hoarding all the money. Like, the right move is not to spend money because you have money. The right move for your personal self, and who cares about the economy, really?
Right.
It's fake. I'm telling you that.
Do
now.
The right thing with your money.
Do the right thing with your personal money.
Right.
Think about how wonderful it is that the economy is improving, but then also save your own money.
Yeah. File that 0.4% that you just got in
Put
your
that
wage
right
increase.
Into a savings account.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
In any case, some great North Korea news.
Oh, God.
This week.
A couple really good stories, which are. We love, as you know.
We love a good North Korea story. The first is that they launched a tourism website, which is it's an interesting choice for them. Because they are currently not allowing tourists to come to North Korea Ebola.
Ebola, still. That ban is still in place.
The epidemic of Asian Ebola that hasn't hit yet.
They're
ready for it.
Yeah.
So they have, and it's like a really weird website that has like,
it's so wacky.
Some random photos of like a random mangy looking dog on it.
Yeah, there's
and
a
like
dog. They also have
rockets.
I would like to go to that water park though.
No.
They have a water park that's like pyramid themed. It has like these three like crazy large pyramids.
Yeah. Might be the only water park in North Korea, but they
I'd
have
like
one.
I'd like to go there. I know. Do all of their people have water?
they don't. They are diverting water to that
the
water
theme
park
right?
so that they can take a picture as propaganda.
Yeah.
That has nothing to do with actually attracting tourism because they don't want tourists to come there. They just want to look like a wealthy place so that South Korean people will be like, I want to go there.
Right. And also, yeah, the website is, I mean, if you're it's a South only Korean, in Korean, it's only in Korean. So their target audience is questionable because, like, the South Koreans can't go, go and aren't going there. And then
the only people
no one else can look at the website.
Right. Because exactly.
So it's
and also no one else can even go there anyway. So it doesn't once you right look at the website right. as a South Korean person who plans to move to North Korea to experience the glories of communism, what do you do?
Presumably they'll lift the Ebola ban at some point, and then maybe if you at least read Korean and you're from a country that can go to North Korea, then you might go. But I mean, like, right now it's a questionable
time
to launch a website.
So true. I would imagine the most web savvy and PR savvy people know.
Well, the website doesn't always work either. Like, the portals are really weird. Like, you can't get from what, I mean, it's a questionable website.
Yeah. It's a primitive website. Primitive, is what you would say.
Yeah, I like that.
There was also an edict that anyone whose name is Kim Jong-un, like their leader, is going to have to change their name.
Yeah.
They're going to have to be trained to change their name. That was how it was put. Whatever that means. He basically decided to ban citizens from sharing his name.
Yeah.
And there was, like, a document that South Korean television got a hold of that said this. But the way that the document was phrased was, like, all party organs and public security authorities should make a list of residents named Kim Jong-un and train them to voluntarily change their names.
Ah, yes.
They have to be trained to voluntarily do something.
Yes.
Which is a curious thing in North Korea also, because I feel like everyone is voluntarily doing everything there because that's what you have to do to not die.
Yeah.
So I feel like if they just told people to change their name, everyone would be like, okay. Like,
I know.
I feel like it needs to be a training situation.
Nobody would have to be trained.
What do you think the training involves?
Yeah.
It's so hard to know. But so in any case, another thing that we learned from this article that I had not known before was that everyone's required to wear a Kim Il-sung lapel pin.
Yes.
In the whole country. I've often wondered why so many of them wear lapel pins, but I didn't realize it was a requirement. So now I know.
And their birthdays are the most important holidays in North Korea, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because they're considered gods.
Yeah.
It's like Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, that's we're celebrating Jesus
Christ. The birth of Jesus and the birth of Kim Jong-il.
Kim Il-sung is the...
Kim Il-sung.
He's sort of like the father of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you know? He's God. And then,
And the rest of them are gods, you know?
Right.
So in any case, also speaking of North Korea, there was like this big hack at Sony, the studio.
That we could have done a whole story about that.
We could have done a whole story about that, but
it's been crazy.
I mean, when you work in the entertainment industry, it's all anyone's been talking about all week, and I'm pretty much sick of hearing about it. I'm over it. Because, like, who the fuck cares? I mean, I care. It was sort of a funny hack because they had, like, everyone had, like, a really funny graphic on their
They got a lot of information.
A lot of information.
And they also got, like, a lot of people got sent, like, very threatening emails, too, that, like, their family was going to be threatened.
Exactly.
And,
it was, like a very scary...
Right. And a lot of people are, like, thinking that it was North Korea over
the interview.
The interview
that movie that they're coming out about.
We talked about that because North Korea said that it was, like, an act of terror and, like, called on the president to, like, make sure that, like, the movie didn't get released and all of those things. So, like...
James Franco will never be able to visit North Korea.
Can't go
there. He'll never meet Dear Leader. So sad.
Which is good because Dear Leader thinks that he would kill him if he came anyway because that's what the premise of the movie is.
Exactly. But so in any case... North Korea finally claimed that they were not responsible. They probably were considering being responsible if they could have.
Yeah.
It would have been, you know, why not be? Why not take responsibility for that? It's like an accidental act of terrorism that you get to, that you win by getting to claim.
Yeah.
But also the documents that they released or that were released after the hack were hilarious because it was a lot of internal memos and zillions of there was one that was like a list of complaints from employees.
Yeah.
And it was like mostly complaints about how many Adam Sandler films they're producing. Which people are not happy at Sony about how dumb their Adam Sandler movies are. So,
it has been without going on and on about it too much because, like you said, everybody's been talking about it. But like it is a very serious. It's like one of the biggest hacks.
Oh, it was
ever.
Huge. Yeah,
and it was huge, and like you know, millions of downloads of like movies that are like either still in theaters or not out yet have happened because like links of those like got you know made their way to sort of like file sharing sites and things like that. So like I mean, Sony really is sort of like stands to. I mean,
lose
and also just like, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, ultimately. I mean, it's been a huge hit for them. So whoever did it really
fucked
got
them over.
Where it hurts.
Yeah.
But anyway, so that's
that happened.
Story.
And in North Korea didn't do it.
You can read more about that someplace else.
Yeah. Go to Deadline or something.
Right. Exactly.
But also, know that North Korea is not actually capable of doing that kind of hack.
Obviously.
Their tourism website barely works.
Proof by the previous story.
Yeah, exactly. And in final news, also about terrorism.
Oh my God, we had a
bomb scare at the federal courthouse in San Diego.
Oh my God!
But then it turned out Okay. There was a bomb scare earlier this week. Someone spotted an egg-shaped piece of aluminum attached to an electrical cord on the patio next to a door.
What was it?
And so they evacuated the building and the bomb squad came in. It was a vibrator. It was a sex toy. That happened. Genius. That's real. And we'll leave you with that information.
That's it.
That's what's happening in San Diego. It's the news from San Diego. We will be back next week. Then we'll have other topics of discussion, I guess. I don't know what's going to happen next week. This week was an exciting
week. Last week we ended, we were like, hopefully we won't have to bring you such terrible news again next week.
Turns out every week is terrible.
Maybe there somebody else will not be indicted this week that we can tell you about.
At this point, if I were on a grand jury, I would vote to indict anyone just to be safe. You don't know. They're still going to get a trial, you know?
Yeah.
But once you've voted to indight them, you've done your part.
Yeah, you can wash your hands.
You can wash your hands of the situation. You didn't make the wrong choice.
No.
That's what I feel like with a grand jury. You can't go wrong with indicting someone.
No.
You can go maybe right by not indicting someone in the right situation, but you can't go wrong by indicting them. So why bother?
Yeah. Agreed.
In any case, that's the news this week. We will see you next week, and then you'll hear from us then.
Bye.
Bye.